Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Michelle, we have two lovely guests today joining us on the podcast from the nonprofit world. They're actually consultants to nonprofit organizations. It's Gail Bauer from Philadelphia and Karen Eber Davis from Sarasota, Florida. And Gail and Karen, thank you and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And I'm aware that, of course, you wrote a brilliant article and that we published on the blog site this week about leadership in the nonprofit world. So thank you for doing that. And I'm also aware that the two of you recently did a very extensive survey and analysis of leaders in the nonprofit world and published a report recently entitled What's Really Happening with Nonprofit Revenue. And so I think our audience really wants to hear about that.
Yeah,
so why don't you share a little bit about that report?
What are you discovering?
Well, we had a really great range of people participating. So we'll just talk about that for a second so that people understand who we talk to. We tried to make this as national and wide in scope as possible. We had organizations of all sizes and all different subsectors. We had about a third who were under $250,000 in revenue, about a third between $250,000 and $1 million, and then just over a third over $1 million, about 23% between 1 and 5 million and 13% over 5 million. So a really good range. And then again, a really good range in a number of different sectors, with the greatest actually being arts and culture. And we had 13 different partners who helped Karen and me get the word out and get as much participation as possible. So while we didn't ask a geographic question, we do feel like we have a lot of, you know, good representation from around the country. And just a couple highlights. We, as you can imagine, revenue is going down. So there was not such great news, but good news also. And the bad news is that for many organizations, revenue is declining. But for some, revenue is increasing. So that was good news.
Yeah. And just so for our listeners to know, it's, you know, mid-August 2020. We're a few months into COVID. And such an interesting time and a great time for you both to do this study.
Well, we were fascinated because I think we really miss being with people. You go to a meeting and you catch up what's going on with your neighbors and you hear other rumors and all that's missing. And so we really felt the need to say, what is happening? Talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you got a tremendous response. So I want to acknowledge you for doing the work and reaching out to folks in the nonprofit world and publishing your report and your findings, which we will make available a link to that free report in the show notes that'll accompany the podcast. So you did write about what you derived some changes in leadership style that you saw happening as a result of the pandemic. So why don't you share a little bit about this solving and creative style?
Okay, let me put a frame around that. One of the things about the survey, data is always there, but what's fascinating to me was the answers to the questions. Because when we did that, there were three patterns. And one of those patterns was worry and anxiety and fear, kind of a frozen, oh my gosh, what's happening? And then some of that was, and real clear, accepting. These are the facts. I'm analyzing what's going on, and I don't know, but I've got facts. And then what was wonderful and hopeful was the solving style, which you mentioned, David. And that was really the approach of like, oh, I've got this interesting thing happening, and I'm doing these things. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm trying these new things. Someone said that they had started a matching campaign, which is pretty gutsy in the middle of May, June, to do that. And that not only were they doing well with it, they were getting larger gifts.
Another thing that we saw too is just such an all-out belief and passion in the organization and in the value of the work of the organization, which, you know, in the nonprofit sector, that's fairly, you know, that's pretty common. But people really talked from that place and, you know, saying things like, we're going to just talk to everyone we can. We're going to get the word out as broadly as we can. We're going to find donors. We're going to find this. They were just unflappable and unstoppable in their efforts to find people, let them know about their programs and, you know, and bring them into the fold as donors or whatever, you know, whatever way, whatever thing that they were working on. So that to us was really positive. And so that led us to seeing that, that resilience that comes through once you move through these stages of grieving, which we're all doing, but once you get out of the fear and feeling stuck in that place and then move to acceptance and then get beyond that, then you can start to see, wow, you know, maybe there is something that I can do here. Maybe there is something that I can turn around and move this in a different direction.
What I love about what you're both saying is that this is one of the reasons why Michelle and I and Janice and Margaret and all of our partners at Fundraising Leadership work with leaders in the nonprofit world, because we know that nonprofit leaders are sort of purpose and passion driven. So even though profits and money are down, the purpose and the passion is keeping them going.
It's like they got clarity about what their work was.
Yeah.
Like they remembered, oh yeah, it's not just about putting events on, but it's about having that mission, and the mission is vital and we don't want to lose it. So like fighting for their lives in a sense of clarity, in the sense of a good fight. Like, I'm going to run the marathon here.
Right. Mm-hmm. We need to have the impact we need to have. Yeah.
That's exactly. Like, you know what? We really do matter.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that I saw, and Karen and I talked about this, in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a tendency for leaders to feel that their work didn't matter because, you know, well, we're not finding a cure for coronavirus, or we're not feeding all the people that are suddenly out of work, or we're not addressing homelessness. And I remember saying to one client, yes, but you're a leadership organization. Don't you think we need leaders right now? And it was like her head just spun around. She was like, oh my gosh, yes. So I've tried to, you know, urge my clients to remember that, you know, even though we have a lot of effort and energy going into some of the big issues right now, we still need this full panoply of infrastructure that we have in the nonprofit space.
Yeah,
that's some of the healing that will come through this sector.
Yeah.
And the people who have spent their lives building organizations, whether it's your founders who are long deceased or the people now who are keeping it going, that work is so important to us.
Well, I heard you use the word grieving earlier. There's a cycle to this, it sounds like the fear, the anxiety, the grief over what was and what no longer is, and then that sort of acceptance, right? And then moving into sort of what can we create now? Like, this work is important. We have a mission. We need to be good leaders in the world.
Right. And I think that also comes from the recognition, you know, partly it's externally driven and partly it's internally referenced, but the external condition is that people are starting to realize, oh, right, we're going to be doing this for quite a while. You know, this is going to be with us. So we can sit around and, you know, be unhappy and feel purposeless, or we can get it together and, you know, go in a different direction. But the internal piece, the leaders, as Karen said, the leaders who really felt, you know, driven by their passion and by the purpose and the confidence that they have in their mission, was what was really interesting to us.
And it sounds like that confidence in that mission has given them energy. There's like in that creative energy that you're talking about, there's so much like, oh my gosh, okay, how can we think out of the box? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so it's the hope. I think you build hope by moving into some solution, even if it's not the right solution. Another piece of that hope was people talk about how dear their donors were to them. Mm-hmm. And that was in the study, both something people worried about, but also something people were excited about. They had both feelings about that. That was the biggest concern and the most hope. But the value of donors saying, yeah, you're not alone in this. I got passion for this too. I'm going to do what I can for you now.
Well, I love that you're bringing that. You mentioned that in the article, and this idea of hope, and it reminds me of the Shawshank Redemption. I don't know if you guys have ever seen. That's one of my favorite films of all time. And if you've not seen that, Gail, drop that into your Netflix or Amazon. Oh, it's great, great film. It's a prison film, and it's a story about a relationship between two men in the prison, and one talks about hope, like having hope here, or a life sentence. They're both in prison with life sentences, and one of the characters is like, you know, don't hope, it will, you know, it'll drive you crazy. And And the other character is like, no, you have to hope. You have to have hope. And then towards the end of the film, there's a great scene where one of them sort of has a bit of a turnaround. The one who thinks, like, you know, hope is a bad thing. He starts saying, I hope I can see my friend. I hope the Pacific Ocean is as blue as it is in my dreams. And I hope. So there is that. If you don't like that word, we could say it's anticipation, or the energy of expectancy and possibility. And you mentioned that in the article. So what are you seeing with these nonprofits as they start to shift out of fear and anxiety and then accepting what is and then moving into possibility?
So one example is a prospect I talked to yesterday. They immediately got on, when we had the shutdown, they immediately went digital. And they had no idea they could go digital, but they had someone who was on staff who was a digital savvy person, and she got 30 programs on digital immediately. They also ended up looking at what was coming, took an assessment, and said, let's just cancel our gala, 4 days away. And they lost all the funding that would happen at the gala. So all the paddle raises, they lost that. But they kept all the funding except for a small amount of over $200,000 that was pledged or promised and tickets sold. And part of the way they did that was to say, hey, this is what's happening, we're canceling. Here's some options of why it'd be good to leave your money with us. But if you want, we will give you a refund. So they structured it that they kept people on board. So very hopeful. And now they're moving towards the future. And that is to say, we're going to have another gala, but we don't know what it's going to be yet. So here's package A and here's package B. But we're going to do it, maybe online, maybe not, but here's your packages. And they're moving.
Nice.
Yeah, I have one client who made a slight shift in their work. They work with volunteer pilots, about 400 volunteer pilots, and they transport patients that have to get somewhere. And my client is in the Northeast region of the country, and they transport people to, you know, surgeries or nothing emergency oriented, but, you know, a regular treatment or something that traveling by car, train is, or even commercial airlines is too much. And so these pilots pick them up and transport them and so on. And they arrange these wonderful missions, and the pilots and the patients and families start to develop these wonderful relationships. Well, obviously in the beginning of the pandemic, that was impossible for them to do. They didn't want to, you know, we didn't know enough, and they didn't want to put the pilots or the families at risk or whatever. So they switched, they made a change and started transporting PPE. And in the process of doing that, I mean, that was a really big need. I guess it still is. I keep hearing that we don't have enough PPE, which is astounding. But they made that switch really quickly and generated lots of television coverage out of it. So they turned something that was, you know, that was sort of a constraint for them into something new and something that generated a lot of publicity. And it's very short-term publicity, but it gets their name out there in a really positive way. And it was really wonderful.
Great thinking out of the box, and still still living up to their mission.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Exactly. And the pilots felt really good about it, and so on. So that was Angel Flight East. So
yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, give them a shout out.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, I love these out of the box thinking. You know, it's like being creative with what you've got. And that, I think that's the acceptance part. It's like, okay, this is what we have, and then you get to create from that very present, very realistic moment. It's like, okay, this is what we have. Now what? Now what can we do? You know, we've got the planes, we've got the pilots, we've got the,
Where's their need? And there's a marketplace, right?
Yeah, Michelle and I do a lot of work with clients, coaching clients around the emotional field, and the graphic that you created for the blog post, the one, I don't know, which one of you created that lovely graphic?
Resilience Continuum.
So it's very similar to the work we do with coaching clients around the emotional field. And the first step is just to notice that you're having an emotion of anxiety, fear, whatever it is. Often those are what people are experiencing right now. And then we will actually have clients be with that emotion for a while. See, the, what the tendency is to step over that emotion. So you can never get to acceptance as long as you keep stepping over rejecting that you're having this experience of fear. You just keep having it. So I like, it's very consistent with our coaching model. And then once you actually allow yourself to have the experience of fear and anxiety, like, oh my God, we might go out of business, or we won't be able to serve our constituents, our stakeholders. I'm not going to think about that right now. Well, as soon as you say, I'm not going to think about that right now, you're thinking about that right now.
bigger, yeah.
And then you can come to acceptance, and then you can move into action, because now you have more meaning around it. So I really love that you guys shared that. And I'm wondering if you, in the consulting work that you're doing, if you are helping any clients really get to that place of just accepting what is, even before they try to get creative and pivot. I mean, that's all good stuff. That's all, like, you can do that from a good place. I'm just wondering what you're seeing out there, and what you're encouraging clients to do around this acceptance.
I think you're right on. And I would also add, sometimes those emotions, all three of these cycles, we accept, we worry, we accept, we solve in the same hour and a half, because it's all happening so fast. But I often am like, you know, this is what is, what should I do about this? Well, why don't you share that feeling or that concern? You know, why don't you say that to your donor? I really, really miss you. Is there some way we can connect more often?
Yeah.
You know, so go with what is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great, Karen. Yeah. Yes.
Well, there's something about this time that has created such a vulnerability in all of us in so many different ways. And what I love about what you're saying, Karen, is like that being vulnerable, like, I'm not quite sure, you know, saying to your donor, like, I'm not quite sure what to do about this, is a way of actually creating relationship in a whole new way. And being able to create, go into that creative way together. Like, well, what, you know, we're both aligned around this mission. How can we make this happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That vulnerability, I really do miss you. I think we're really feeling that in ways that that we love each other.
Yes.
And we would not use that word professionally, but there is a true love that we have for people who love what we love. It's of our course. Donors, our supporters, our board members, our staff.
Yeah, Michelle and I use an even dirtier word. Should I tell them what the dirty word is, Michelle?
Well, sure.
Intimacy.
Oh, that's good. That's what I was thinking about that word. And I wanted
to... Yeah. Because there is an intimacy when you have a relationship, you know, a working relationship, you have a shared mission, you know, there is an intimacy in that. And vulnerability is, when we use the word intimacy, it allows vulnerability in an easier way. Relationship we kind of use in so many different ways.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, one thing that I've been urging my clients, to your point of intimacy, is to be really careful about language that they use in marketing materials too, because, you know, we're all really stressed and it comes out, just pops out of nowhere sometimes, or we're somewhere or talking to someone and their stress just pops up, even if we're feeling cool as a cucumber. And I can't believe I just said that. My grandmother would have said. Anyway, so I've been really encouraging people I've been asking people or encouraging people to try RICE, which stands for, in their communications, relevant, intimate or personal, calm and empathic. Because I think that when we can frame whatever the messages are in ways that are really relevant, people have so much going on in their heads right now, because it is a really stressful time and we don't know when our email is going to land in their inbox and what's going on for them, or what other challenges they're facing in their life. So having, you know, these are really personal communications methods, you know, email or social media, it's right on our phone or right on our computer screen. So keeping the tone down, keeping it nice, mm-hmm. keeping it intimate so that we can get through to people.
I love that you're hiding a dirty word in an acronym. Rice is nice. Rice is nice.
Yeah, so, and I do when I talk about it, I say, you know, personal. What I mean by that is make it personal. So yeah. You're right. It's like we don't talk about it.
I love it. I love it. It's great. Yeah. It's awesome. I'm glad you're using that. It's people really do shy away, and we do need yeah. more connection. We need more intimacy. We need more love right now, for sure. I actually struggle with using the word love more than I do the yeah. word intimacy. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage leaders in that nonprofit world to incorporate those two words into their vocabulary with their staff and with their donors, of course.
Maybe yeah. we'll start a trend right yeah. here on this podcast.
Right? All right, let's right do now, it.
Right now, no time like the present.
Right.
Wow. Well, teaching us.
Gail and Karen, you know that we like to give the audience, so there's an action-oriented podcast, and while we appreciate, and I'm sure they're going to appreciate the report that you're providing, we like to give them something to try and put into action. So what do you want to give the audience today to try?
I'll go first. So, one of the things that we talked about in the blog post that your readers will see when they check it out, and I encourage everyone to do that, is we talked about a couple different catalysts for creativity. Two of them, for example, are expansion and contraction. And, you know, for example, when you brainstorm, you're coming up with lots of ideas, but then you have to narrow them down. Well, with COVID, we are already narrowed down. We are so constrained. We need no more constraint. We need expansion. So how within our constrained, confined place of operation right now, and I don't mean physically space, but within our confines of constraint, how can you find expansion? And so one little movement in that direction is to think about all those other things on your brainstorming list. What is on your back burner that you could bring to the fore, dust off, see if it's still relevant? How does it still fulfill your mission? How can you find funding for it? And how to put that into place? So my question is, what's on your back burner? And I'll give you a quick example. There's a colleague of mine named Emma Dunch. She lived in New York. She was a fundraising consultant. She's Australian, and she moved back to Australia a couple years ago to take over the CEO role for the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. And just within the last week or 10 days, they announced an initiative called 50 Fanfares that they're recording works. They're, first of all, commissioning 50 works by living Australian composers, and then they're recording them and also creating teaching resources. So they're creating this legacy in this moment. They're still employing these artists, they're employing their musicians, and they're I have goosebumps, and they're creating this legacy beyond them for students in Australia to carry on and to learn about. So I just think that's a marvelous example of pulling something off the back burner and, you know, creating relevance and having a lot of creativity.
Beautiful.
How about you, Karen?
Tough to follow that. I'm going to suggest that listeners think of something that's bugging them that they want to solve, and they go to the person and share that they're struggling with something that needs a solution. Use some of the feelings. I'm concerned about this. I'm scared. Or maybe we can solve it together and bring that and not try to just take it internally and worry about it, but instead share it to create love and intimacy.
Oh, awesome. We love
two
that.
Great rice, things right?
Two great things to try. Gail Bauer, Karen Eber Davis, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast. How can our audience get in touch with each of you?
I'm at www.kedconsult.com. Or if you look up my name on Google, Karen Eber, E-B-E-R, Davis, we'll get you there.
And my web address is gailbower.com. It's GAILBOWER.com. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, we will be sure to link to your websites, from the show notes, so folks can find you there as well. And why don't you bring us home, Michelle?
Well, yeah, please subscribe to our, please subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. We love having these conversations with fantastic guests. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review it so others can find us as well. Now, go put it into practice. Curiosity.